Muad'Dib. The prophet? The one who points the way. These are our own religious patterns, aren't they? This is our doing. Muad'Dib means kangaroo mouse. An unusual war name for a Fremen. What if Paul Atreides were still alive?
Enough! This must not come out. Even to your father's ears, understand?
I do, Reverend Mother.
Hello and welcome to the Dead Letter Movie Podcast. This is episode 95, recorded Sunday, March 17th, 2024. I'm Tim.
I'm Andrew.
And we are, as we absolutely must, covering Denis Villeneuve's new movie, Dune Part 2.
Yes, I'm glad they didn't give it some kind of random subtitle.
That would have been weird. I mean, they were upfront about part one. I mean, you know, lots of the posters and everything still say Dune, but the title card for that movie says Dune Part One.
Mm-hmm.
It was always part one. This is part two.
I'm glad it's not, you know, Dune 2 Spice Boogaloo or something, but
really bothers me. You know,
Big Worm Boogaloo. That's
people on the internet calling it, oh, Dune 2. No, this is Dune Part 2.
This is
still Dune. It's not a sequel. This is Part 2.
Well, it's like, you know, Tarantino with the whole Volume 2 thing.
I
wonder if people would have figured that out more. I don't know. Yeah, this practice goes all the way to Godfather Part Two, mm-hmm. actually. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
yep. Not the first two movie that apparently was Catermass Two, but that's not that's just a second one, not a part of the same. Whatever. We've gone too far into this anyway. Tim, you've watched this movie. You watched this movie a little. You've had a little bit more time to process this than I did. So, about? Well, I guess first we'll synopsize real quick. So this is the continuing adventures of Paul Atreides as he gets in with the Fremen. We pick up pretty much right where the last movie left off, which makes sense. Very shortly after. So he gets in with the Fremen and becomes, you know, a big deal with them pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Becomes the leader of the rebellion against the... So I'm so used to the 84 Harkonnen pronunciation, but like Harkonnen, they're on the planets of Arrakis, you know, trying to keep them at bay and all the machinations of conspiracy between the Harkonnen and the Empire and the Bene Gesserits, and there's all that stuff, which is all interesting, and I'm trying to not bog down with saying too much.
There's a lot going on. It's very, very
there's a
dense,
lot going on,
as was the novel and even previous adaptations for mm-hmm. you know, all that they left out or did differently. So
yeah, but you've had a little bit longer to process this than I have. So how about you start?
So yeah, I went and saw this. Yeah, saw this opening weekend. A lot of the stylistic choices that they made and were apparent in part one remain here and are still very effective. I love the overall look and feel here. It's very, very true to the books. I love the vibe. There are some, you know, great, you know, big action set pieces that are very well realized. Those were a lot of fun to watch. So that works. Performances are all good. It's a great cast. They're doing good work, all of them. Nobody's phoning it in here.
It's interesting because I've been thinking about Dave Bautista. Mm-hmm. And how, like, a lot of people are saying that, like, he's one of the few wrestlers who's actually trying to be an actor, that seems callous, but I mean, like, you know, here are the terms that people are throwing around. The Rock wants to be a movie star, mm-hmm. I get that.
Sure.
John Cena wants to be an entertainer, but, you know, may want to be an actor too. I could see that feasibly happening for him, but Dave Bautista is like on the path to be in like a Scorsese-esque kind of role down the line, you know, that kind of thing. But this time I feel like I didn't really see as much of that with him here, which was, you know, a little disappointing, but also not unheard of considering the character he has.
That's the thing. Character
I do think he does well with what he has though.
But it's, you know, very deliberately, I mean, even in the book, a pretty one-dimensional character. The Beast Raban is called the Beast. That's not his real name. That's a nickname that he earned because mm-hmm. he's kind of just big and dumb and, you know, violent and doesn't really think things through at all. So
Yeah. So like, it's the thing. It's like, I do feel like everyone does. No one really phones it in, but then a lot of people aren't given a lot to work with, I guess.
Yeah. Is the thing. So but, there is that.
Yeah, but I agree. Like, that is definitely something that works really well. And I also agree with the overall look. I think that's something that's, you know, that totally fits this world really well. I actually think I'd like Zimmer's score more this time than last time. If only because like parts of it were weirdly reminding me of Toto's 84 score.
But reminiscent.
But I kept going, like, I listened to both of them back and forth to figure out where I was getting that, and I can't really put my finger on it, but I did find myself really enjoying the score this time. Not like I didn't like the score before, I just found myself really digging it this time. And I think Chalamet does a good job as Paul here. Mm-hmm. I think he's really getting into the role pretty well. Same thing with Zendaya. So like, I think that there's a lot of, you can definitely see how these actors have like grown in these characters in the short amount of time between movies. I mean, like, it's not a super short amount of time, but it was like, you know, they got some time to really get into it, as per se, for the ones that have, you know, more dimensional mm-hmm. roles. Like, I even think Josh Brolin got to do more with this.
And that was actually a thing I liked. We got a little bit more of Josh Brolin as the character of Gurney Halleck, played by Sir Patrick Stewart in the 1984 film. But we got a little bit more of his depth and kind of his story here. That was neat. I appreciated that. We got a little bit of him playing the Balisette, and you know, not singing, but you know, sort of reciting poetry with the music, which, you know, that was kind of a thing for him. So
yeah. So it's there's a lot to like here. I do agree that the set pieces are really cool. The worms look really cool. Mm-hmm. To be honest, like, I feel like, Alex, this might be jumping ahead into what doesn't work as much, but like, the movie didn't really grab me until we started writing words. which was like a good, like, half an hour, 40 minutes or so. Like, it took a while to get there. And maybe like, and I'll get into why about that, but for the most part, I think it's more works than doesn't work, I would say, ultimately. But what doesn't work for you, Tim?
So mostly, quick before I dive into that, I also want to call out Javier Bardem. Stilgar, who was really good here.
Stilgar, the hype man.
Which is a little different than previous characterizations like in the book, but you know, is still, you know, very credible and very entertaining to watch. So, you know, good job there as well. Things that don't work. The things that don't work for me are, rather unsurprisingly, things that are different in the adaptation from the source material. For the most part, there are changes that are made. It's okay. There are always going to be some. I felt like some of these were unnecessary. Like, there was no real reason to make some of these changes. It didn't add anything. They did it for what reason? It doesn't serve the story particularly. It's just, yeah. And I questioned some of that. Why? What was the rationale here for some of those?
You can't help but wonder if it's because they want to do later books, and they have something they're trying to set something up for later.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's part of it, but there's also, like, you know, it also feels like it's not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So this isn't like the Lord of the Rings where we like know another movie is for sure coming. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of like complicated in that sense.
Yeah. But some of these changes have nothing at all to do with that.
That's what you're saying.
That doesn't set up anything that comes in later books or other parts of the story. It's just different for no apparent reason. Some of it.
And someone who didn't read the books and isn't really immersed in this world very much, like, those things didn't exactly bother me because they seem to fit this version of the story.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I look at it in the movie of itself, like, outside of what it's adapting, because I have no real frame of reference there, like, those changes seem fine to me, with the exception of, like, the Leia Seydoux's character. Like, I don't know, she's cool and everything.
Yeah,
like I don't really know where that's going here. Like that's the only perplexing bit for me. But like, it's the kind of thing that I expect to get to happen later in a later movie, but maybe it will, maybe it won't. Sounds like it shouldn't because of the books, but, but maybe they have their own thing going on. So I don't know. But yeah, like we're saying, the action set pieces work, but I also think they go on a little long. I found myself in the theater being like, I'm actually like, so I, a little less than a year ago, I finally watched all of the David Lynch version, not the 3 hour one that I was first exposed to, but the film festival here in town was doing all of David Lynch movies. So I decided to get all the ones I hadn't seen in the theater out of the way. So Dune was one of them. And so I watched his preferred cut of it, which was still not his favorite, but it was what he preferred nonetheless. Yeah. And I walked away being like, there's a lot of exposition in this, and like a ton. And because in the Lynch version, this movie is like maybe 40 minutes of the Lynch movie. Yeah. And this is a 2.5 hour film. So that kind of says something. But so there's a lot of exposition in that one. But then I found myself in this one being like, you know, I would have been cool with some exposition here instead of having to actually sit through this. Or like how in that one, there's a lot of montages of stuff that happens. And there's a lot of those action scenes that could have been a montage, which was like, I think you agreed with, right?
Yeah, I do. I have mixed feelings about it because, like I said, those action set pieces were really good, and it was it was cool to see them, you know, fully realized in that way. It's like, you know, here's, you know, this complete scene, this whole, you know, sequence of events for this, you know, one thing. That was cool, but I think we could have done with a little bit less. We could have maybe, you know, cut one of those out and turned it into a montage. And save some runtime to better serve other parts of the story that were maybe underserved in this theatrical cut of this. So, yeah, it's complicated.
It's complicated. Well, and the thing is, like, those scenes with Leia and Austin Butler are like really cool. They look really neat. But when I left the theater, I was like, that could have been condensed or not there at all. Like that was like, and this is, you know, again, this is a guy who hasn't read the books, but does know what a strong movie feels like.
Yeah.
And this definitely seemed to weaken the film in my opinion. It looked cool in the moment, but when I was walking home from the theater, I was like, maybe not. But yeah, I do think Austin Butler does a good job as what was I calling him before we were recording? Elvis, not Sting. Yes,
right.
Yeah, and like I do think he does. He's a very, very creepy, very enticing character in that scene. Maybe not super. I mean, like I'd say he's slightly more than one dimensional, but only it's like 1.5 dimensional, maybe.
Yeah. No, I agree. Does a good job, is creepy, which, you know, is
what that character needs to be. Yeah.
Yeah. But I also agree. Yeah. Some of those scenes ran maybe a little long. It's like you could have done this with half the dialogue and, you know, implied certain things without, you know, necessarily telling us quite as much. It's like we would have got there. That would have been fine.
I do feel like there's a lot of, are you getting what's going on? Are you getting this? Are you getting, like, I feel like there's a lot of that stuff could have not happened. And
there's some of that for sure. I did appreciate and enjoy that the movie spends time going a little bit deeper with the Bene Gesserit kind of as an organization and all their political machinations and their conspiracies and plans and such. That was neat to be shown a little more of that. Show, don't tell. Generally good. I feel like we could have maybe had a little bit less of that, similar to the big action set pieces.
Yeah, I feel like I kind of got it pretty quickly. Like I didn't need it spelled out for me all that much. Yeah,
like the David Lynch movie. I mean, we're gonna draw comparisons. It always was. Sorry. Didn't really give a whole lot of that. You kind of got enough of a sense that there were some things going on. This movie shows us a little more of that is in the books, and that's cool. I feel like we could have served the overall story a little better with a little less. Most of my issues here are just questions of degrees.
Yeah, most of my stuff is just like taking it back like a little bit. Like I feel like there's probably like half an hour at least that could get cut from this that would make a stronger film, and just, you know, taking it back and trusting the audience a little bit more. Yeah. And things like that. I mean, like, and maybe And like the thing that a lot of people complain about the David Lynch one, and they're not wrong, is that you feel like you have to have read the books to understand that movie. And I remember my dad telling me that when he saw it, he brought along a friend who read the book to like ask. And I think he actually went to one of those showings where you got a glossary of terms.
Oh, dang.
When yeah, so like that was like a weird thing that they did for the 84 one that you got like a little handout
Ooh.
To like discuss things, which is never a good
Yeah,
sign. But yeah.
that's rough.
So like that's a thing that I imagine that they were probably thinking maybe if we don't do this, it'll be like that, and we don't want to do that. And who knows if that's, you know, Denis or if that's Warner Brothers or who knows. But
Yeah.
yeah, so like that's my other big complaint. I only have one like major complaint. And the thing is, I don't blame anyone in this. Well, except for the casting director, is Christopher Walken was probably not the best choice. I like Christopher Walken. He does a fine time with the role, and this is the kind of movie you can get away with a star-studded cast and everything. But the whole time I was just like, that's just Christopher Walken. Like like just the whole time. And just every time he talked, I was like, you're Christopher Walken. I'm having a hard time with this.
Yeah,
But,
I mean
yeah.
the character is important, his existence is important, but
Yeah,
he doesn't
yeah.
really have a whole lot to actually do in the source material or in this movie. So, I mean, yeah, there are any number of other actors who could have done just as good a job. I don't know who would have actually been better, to your point of saying Christopher Walken was maybe not the best.
Ian McKellen
I mean, Ian McKellen would have done a fine job as well. I don't know that it
or
would have been better.
Patrick Stewart would have been interesting.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
I think, you know, so prior to part one, I'm quick aside here.
Yeah.
There had been apparently in the pre-production for part one some discussion of bringing in Kyle MacLachlan for some sort of role for this movie, and they decided against it just because we want this to really be its own thing. It's like, yeah, it would
Yeah.
be cool to have, you know, the
And
nod to history and what came before, but
And I get
let's set
that.
this apart. And I, yeah, as much as I'm a fan of Patrick Stewart, no surprise, I feel like that would have had the same effect here.
No, and I agree. And like I
Yeah.
totally get that. I don't think that that was a bad case for
Yeah.
them. But the thing is, like, casting Christopher Walken feels like that. It's
It
like
does kind of like, I
yeah,
mean,
not
heck,
not
you could have had Kyle MacLachlan be Shaddam the Fourth in this
Yeah.
movie, and that would have been fine, apart from, you know, the misgivings that they had already expressed. So,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Like I don't know how to fix this problem necessarily other than cast someone else, but I don't exactly have someone like in the chamber to be like, you should have
Yeah.
done this instead. But it could have been
Right.
any old white guy, to be honest.
Yeah, Florence Pugh also very good here.
Yeah. In a role that feels thankless for her, but I feel like in she'll have more to do in later stuff.
Yeah, if and when there's a part three, she'll have a little more to do. You know, kind of like the Emperor himself, her character's existence is important in the book. Like she's sort of present throughout. Like every chapter is prefaced by, yeah, a little fictional excerpt from one of her histories that she writes. She herself doesn't really appear in any scenes except toward the very end. So, you know, same kind of thing there.
Yeah, the and that's in the Lynch version too, because but she feels even more out of place than, you know, it's not Virginia Madsen's fault, but I mean, like, the movie begins with her like giving us the exposition dump of what spice is and Arrakis and all that, and then we don't see her ever again until like
Until the very end, which was totally in keeping with the book. It's like that was a solid parallel. That worked for what it was, at least for me at the time. It comes off, yeah, kind of cheesy and dated now, the way it was done. But yeah, no, that's kind of how it was in the book, kind of.
And so they do a good job of like folding her into the narrative a little bit more. So like that, yeah. So there, I don't know, there's a lot of like smart ways of doing adaptation here that I really like, but at the same time, I feel like there's probably some editing that could happen. Do we feel like the film's deeper themes are adequately expressed?
For the most part, yes, actually. And I like how, particularly with the character of Chani, they gave her a little more agency than maybe she had in the book. And in previous adaptations, they kind of explored a little bit of a different direction with her that sort of dug into some of that in ways that Frank Herbert maybe didn't quite. He was sort of expressing that, but no character in the story was aware of it in that way. So I liked that, but I felt like it changed the character a little more than it needed to. Like, Zendaya does a fine job. It's interesting. It's totally credible as a human would very possibly respond this way. I didn't have a hard time buying that. But it was enough of a departure from the source material in certain places that it's like, okay, that was a little jarring. People watching this who had not read the book or seen either of the previous adaptations might not have the same hang up.
Yeah.
But I even without my personal baggage, I still felt like that made the ending a little bit unsatisfying.
No, I'm kind of with you. I find that it feels like a movie that's setting up the next movie.
Yeah.
And that's sort of but the thing is, like, when I know that's happening, that, like, it's less of a problem. Like, yeah, like, you know, you watch an old film serial at the end of it, you know, Flash Gordon's in some kind of cliffhanger, but you know the next time you go to the movie, you're gonna get resolution for that particular aspect. When we were seeing The Lord of the Rings, like, we knew next year there was another movie to watch.
Yeah, because they shot all three of those, concurrently.
Back to back to back. And here, like, there isn't really a guarantee of another one. Though, I mean, I feel like it's probably going to happen. This made adequate money,
and yeah,
people are pretty happy with it. So, like, I imagine it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine it's probably going to happen. But at the same time, like, that, I don't know. It's just, it feels like, yeah, it doesn't quite stick the landing because of that. Right. Even though it's like a cool scene that everything ends on, it just sort of feels, and we're done.
Yeah, which is kind of where we left off with part one. We said exactly that.
Yep.
Will part two stick the landing? Because that was going to color my opinion of the work overall. Well, yep. I feel like I'm in kind of the same place here. So this is not exactly a landing. It's sort of, we're setting up for things that haven't happened yet that we maybe kind of want to.
We're stopping for gas.
Yeah, almost. It's a little weird in that way. So it's like, okay, if and when there's a part three, I'll go see it, because I'm not gonna not at this point. But I was really hoping and sort of expecting that they would actually bring this story to completion, to a landing, with just two parts covering the one novel. Because that's a fine ending point. You can read just the one novel and leave it there, and it's fine. In fact, it's probably better for most. So,
I don't know if I'll watch a third one or not. As of right now, as of this second, it's sort of in my category of has to get nominated for me to watch it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's just because I'm just like, this is cool and everything. I enjoyed this, but this isn't really like my 100% my bag. I enjoyed these two movies. I thought they were really good. I'm not mad I saw them in any way. Possible I'll rewatch them, but it's just not, I don't need more of this world necessarily. So like that's okay. Like that's not a bad thing. So like I think these are really well made for what they are, but I do find myself a little disappointed at the end of this. But yeah. So one thing I particularly like about this, and this is ephemeral outside subtext stuff, is this one continues on the great tradition of weird Dune merchandise. So, and like when everyone was just like up in arms about that weird popcorn bucket, which, I mean, they're not wrong. I mean, like, but
it's really dang weird.
It's really dang weird. But you can find this on YouTube. But I think it was a special feature for an Arrow release of the 84 Dune. They did like a little short on merchandising for the 84 one, because Star Wars was over. And so like they thought, we could cash in and fill that hole. So like there's all these bizarre merchandise options that came out in the 80s for that one. Like there was a board game. Well, everything had a board game back then. That's not that
there weird, there is still a board game. That's a thing.
It's
whole own thing.
Specifically for the movie there was a board game, but then there's activity books. The art that I'm going to use for this episode is actually I took from the Dune coloring book from 1984. But yeah, there was a coloring book. So Like that whole popcorn thing was like, you know, that actually is really in keeping with what has happened with this with this book throughout the years. But what grade would you give this, Tim?
So like I said, I have very mixed feelings about this. There are things that I love, and it's like, yes, that was so on point. And I was, you know, because I'm a good audience member, not actually cheering out loud, but it's like, yes, they got that right. Things in the theater, that's like, I was so pleased that we're done properly and so very true to the characters in the story. And like I said, there are other things that are not. So yeah. I gotta say B+, honestly. This okay. doesn't quite make the A for me. It's right there, but some of the spots where it zigs instead of zags, it's just enough to
I walked out of this feeling. So the first time I saw, not in its entirety, but the first time I was like exposed to Lawrence of Arabia, I caught on TV. And this movie actually kind of borrows some visual stuff from Lawrence of Arabia, which makes sense. I think I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like I think I'm not, that's not a critique. I actually think it was a smart thing to do. And I remember watching the movie, and it was probably on TCM, and I was thinking, this movie is so long and there is so much sand. And that's how I walked out of the theater this time. But the worms are cool. That's a definite thing. I think there's at least one worm puppet, which I liked. Practical effects me was pretty into that. I feel like this is kind of for a while there, I was like, is this a B-? Is this a B? So I think it's kind of like a flat B, like maybe like an 84% if I was going to give it I recommend it. It's good. It's like, I'm certainly not mad I watched it. I do think there's a lot of great stuff going on, but I do find myself kind of disappointed at the end of it. And, you know, maybe I'll feel better about that. Maybe I'll feel better about that in like a few years, even whether or not we even get a third movie.
Yeah. So. I might too. So I've like you said, had a couple of weeks to sit with this and sort of ruminate on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, though, like I think Villeneuve is a great director. I have liked everything that I've seen from him. This isn't as good as Arrival, I would say.
That's his
other science fiction movie I've seen. I actually really like The Prisoners.
Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Prisoners is definitely worth checking out. I need to see Imposter, but I hear it's very weird, which is probably will make it my jam. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and I still need to see Sicario, which was one of his. It's not science fiction.
Yeah. So that movie is pretty good. I wasn't as blown away by it as other people were, but it is a good movie. Like I'm not gonna like that one's kind of like an 84% for me too, I'll be honest. Yeah. So, but it is good. It's definitely worth watching. Yeah.
So, but for now, that's Dune Part 2. That's our review and that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Get